Chapter 11. A simple and a gentle fellow. Bearing this in mind, I asked his friendly permission to leave him restoration of beer, in wishing him good night, and thus it fell out that the last words I heard him say as I blundered down the worn stairs were, "Jeblum's elf. Ladies drinks fust." The night was now well on into the morning, but, for miles and hours we explored a strange world, where nobody ever goes to bed, but everybody is eternally sitting up, waiting for Jack. This exploration was among a labyrinth of dismal courts and blind alleys, called entries, kept in wonderful order by the police, and in much better order than by the corporation. The want of gaslight in the most dangerous and infamous of these places, being quite unworthy of so spirited a town. I need describe but two or three of the houses in which Jack was waited for as specimens of the rest. Many we attained by noisome passages so profoundly dark that we felt our way with our hands. Not one of the whole number we visited was without its show of prints and ornamental crockery. The quantity of the latter set forth on little shelves and in little cases, in otherwise wretched rooms, indicating that mercantile Jack must have an extraordinary fondness for crockery, to necessitate so much of that bait in his traps. Among such garniture, in one front parlor in the dead of the night, four women were sitting by a fire. One of them had a male child in her arms. On a stool among them was a swarthy youth with a guitar, who had evidently stopped playing when our footsteps were heard. "Well, I how do you do?" says Mr. Superintendent, looking about him. "Pretty well, sir, and hope you gentlemen are going to treat us ladies, now you have come to see us." "Order there." says Sharp Eye. "None of that." Says Quick Ear. Trampfoot, outside, is heard to confide to himself, "McGisson's lot this is. And a bad un." Says Mr. Superintendent, laying his hand on the shoulder of the swarthy youth, "and who's this?" "Antonio, sir." "And what does he do here?" "Come to give us a bit of music." "No harm in that, I suppose?" "A young foreign sailor?" "Yes. He's a Spaniard." "You're a Spaniard, ain't you, Antonio?"
"Me Spanish."
"And he don't know a word you say, not he. Not if he was to talk to him till doomsday." Triumphantly, as if it redounded to the credit of the house.
"Will he play something?"
"Oh, yes, if you like."
"Play something, Antonio. You ain't ashamed to play something, are you?"
The cracked guitar raises the feeblest ghost of a tune, and three of the women keep time to it with their heads, and the fourth with the child. If Antonio has brought any money in with him, I am afraid he will never take it out, and it even strikes me that his jacket and guitar may be in a bad way. But the look of the young man, and the tinkling of the instrument so change the place in a moment to a leaf out of Don Quixote, that I wonder where his mule is stabled until he leaves off. I am bound to acknowledge, as it tends rather to my uncommercial confusion, that I occasioned a difficulty in this establishment by having taken the child in my arms. For, on my offering to restore to a ferocious joker not unstimulated by rum, who claimed to be its mother, that unnatural parent put her hands behind her and declined to accept it, backing into the fireplace, and very shrilly declaring, regardless of remonstrance from her friends, that she knowed it to be law, that whoever took a child from its mother of his own will, was bound to stick to it. The uncommercial sense of being in a rather ridiculous position with the poor little child beginning to be frightened, was relieved by my worthy friend and fellow constable, Trampfoot, who, laying hands on the article, as if it were a bottle,
passed it on to the nearest woman, and bade her take hold of that. Apostrophe as we came out the bottle was passed to the ferocious joker, and they all sat down as before, including Antonio and the guitar. It was clear that there was no such thing as a nightcap to this baby's head, and that even he never went to bed, but was always kept up, and would grow up, kept up waiting for Jack. Later still in the night, we came
by the court where the man was murdered, apostrophe and by the other court across the street, into which his body was dragged, to another parlor in another entry, where several people were sitting round a fire in just the same way. It was a dirty and offensive place, with some ragged clothes drying in it, but there was a high shelf over the entrance door to be out of the reach of marauding hands. Possibly, with two large white loaves on it, and a great piece of Cheshire cheese. Well, apostrophe, says Mr. Superintendent, with a comprehensive look all round. How do you do? Apostrophe, not much to boast of, sir. Apostrophe from the curtsying woman of the house. This is my good man, sir. Apostrophe, you are not registered as a common lodging house? Apostrophe, no, sir. Apostrophe, sharp eye in the move on tone, puts in the pertinent inquiry, then why ain't you? Apostrophe, ain't got no one here, Mr. Sharp eye. Apostrophe, rejoin the woman and my good man together, but our own family. Apostrophe, how many are you in family? Apostrophe, the woman takes time to count, under pretense of coughing, and adds, as one scant of breath, 7, sir. Apostrophe, but she has missed one, so Sharp Eye, who knows all about it, says, here's a young man here makes 8, who ain't of your family. Apostrophe, no, Mr. Sharp Eye, he's a weekly lodger. Apostrophe, what does he do for a living? Apostrophe, the young man here, takes the reply upon himself, and shortly answers, ain't got nothing to do. Apostrophe, the young man here, is modestly brooding behind a damp apron pendant from a clothesline. As I glance at him, I become but I don't know why vaguely reminded of Woolwich, Chatham, Portsmouth, and Dover. When we get out, my respected fellow constable Sharp Eye, addressing Mr. Superintendent, says, you noticed that young man, sir, in at Darby's? Apostrophe, yes. What is he? Apostrophe, deserter, sir. Apostrophe, Mr. Sharp Eye further intimates that, when we have done with his services, he will step back and take that young man. Which in course of time he does. Feeling at perfect ease about finding him, and knowing for a moral certainty that nobody in that region will be gone to bed. Later still in the night, we came to another parlor up a step or two from the street, which was very cleanly, neatly, even tastefully, kept, and in which, set forth on a draped chest of drawers masking the staircase, was such a profusion of ornamental crockery, that it would have furnished forth a handsome sale booth at a fair. It backed up a stout old lady Hogarth drew her exact likeness more than once, and a boy who was carefully writing a copy in a copy book. Well, ma'am, how do you do? Apostrophe, sweetly, she can assure the dear gentleman, sweetly, charmingly, and overjoyed to see us. Why, this is a strange time for this boy, to be writing his copy, in the middle of the night. Apostrophe, so it is, dear gentlemen, heaven bless your welcome faces, and send ye prosperous, but he has been to the play with a young friend for his diversion, and he combinates his improvement with entertainment, by doing his school writing afterwards, God be good to ye. Apostrophe, the copy admonished human nature to subjugate the fire of every fierce desire. One might have thought it recommended stirring the fire, the old lady so approved it. There she sat, rosily beaming at the copy book and the boy, and invoking showers of blessings on our heads, when we left her in the middle of the night, waiting for Jack.
Later still in the night, we came to a nauseous room with an earth floor, into which the refuse scum of an alley trickled. The stench of this habitation was abominable, the seeming poverty of it, diseased and dire. Yet, here again, was visitor or lodger a man sitting before the fire, like the rest of them elsewhere, and apparently not distasteful to the mistress's niece, who was also before the fire. The mistress herself had the misfortune of being in jail. Three weird old women of transcendent ghastliness were at needlework at a table in this room. Says Trampfoot to first witch, "What are you making?" Apostrophe apostrophe says she, "Money bags." Apostrophe, "What are you making?" Apostrophe apostrophe retorts Trampfoot, a little off his balance. "Bags to hold your money," apostrophe says the witch, shaking her head, and setting her teeth. "You lass has got it." Apostrophe, she holds up a common cash bag, and on the table, is a heap of such bags. Witch two laughs at us. Witch three scowls at us. Witch sisterhood all, stitch, stitch. First witch has a circle round each eye. I fancy it like the beginning of the development of a perverted diabolical halo, and that when it spreads all round her head, she will die in the odor of devilry. Trampfoot wishes to be informed what first witch has got behind the table, down by the side of her, there. Witches two and three croak angrily, "Show him the child." Apostrophe apostrophe, she drags out a skinny little arm from a brown dust heap on the ground. Adjured not to disturb the child, she lets it drop again. Thus we find at last, that there is one child in the world of entries who goes to bed, if this be bed. Mr. Superintendent asks how long are they going, to work at those bags? How long? First witch repeats. Going to have supper presently. See the cups and saucers, and the plates. Late? Eh. But we has to arm our supper afore we eats it. Apostrophe both the other witches repeat this after first witch, and take the uncommercial measurement with their eyes, as for a charmed winding sheet. Some grim discourse ensues, referring to the mistress of the cave, who will be released from jail tomorrow. Witches pronounce Trampfoot right there, apostrophe when he deems it a trying distance for the old lady to walk. She shall be fetched by niece in a spring cart. As I took a parting look at first witch in turning away, the red marks round her eyes seemed to have already grown larger, and she hungrily and thirstily looked out beyond me into the dark doorway, to see if Jack was there. For, Jack came even here, and the mistress had got into jail through deluding Jack. When I at last ended this night of travel, and got to bed, I failed to keep my mind on comfortable thoughts of Siemens Holmes not overdone with strictness, and improved dock regulations giving Jack greater benefit of fire and candle aboard ship, through my mind's wandering among the vermin I had seen. Afterwards the same vermin ran all over my sleep. Evermore, when on a breezy day I see poor mercantile Jack running into port with a fair wind under all sail, I shall think of the unsleeping host of devourers who never go to bed, and are always in their set traps waiting for him. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.